Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Joel Hargis, an instrument-rated private pilot who flies regularly around Florida and the Southeast for business in his Mooney. Joel is EAA Chapter 534 President and Young Eagle Coordinator promoting aviation.
Hello, I'm Joel Hargis with the Florida Aviation Network, and I'm just so happy to be here at Sun and Fun in Lakeland, Florida for the 2022 version of Sun and Fun Aerospace Show. I think it's the 48th annual this year, and it's going to be another great show. And today we got a really cool interview. We got Phil Lockwood sitting here with me today. Phil, welcome to our show. Phil, you are president of Lockwood Aviation and other things. Just give us a little bit of your bio, if you would.
Sure. Well, I started Lockwood Aviation back in 1989. And we became a Rotax service center and have been doing that ever since. And then developed the AirCam in the mid-90s for that Special National Geographic project. And we continue to support and develop the AirCam now.
So I know you're a Rotax expert, you know, been doing that since the beginning of time almost, right? And but I also want to talk about the AirCam, but we're going to work our way through those if we could. So so the Rotax, for most everybody knows, that's typically used on a light sport aircraft or other experimentals and things like that. And they've been around for how many years?
Well, they built the first aircraft engines in the early 80s. So around 1982, 83 is when they started making aircraft engines. But the company's been around for over 100 years.
Really? Mm-hmm. 100 years. Mm-hmm. And so since the 80s for aircraft engines. And for those that don't know, what makes a Rotax, which is obviously very popular, but what makes it a great airplane, power plant?
Well, in their market, they have about 80% market share. And there are probably 10 other companies that are fighting for that last 20%. So they have been very, very successful for sure. Well, they make lightweight, compact, reliable engines, and I think they have a good engineering team. And there's a passion there within the company for aviation. So the other thing that they have that some of the other companies maybe don't, that gives them an edge, is that they're building a lot of engines for a lot of different applications, all of which we really require a lightweight, compact engine, whether it's for Sea-Doos, personal watercraft, or for Ski-Doos, snowmobiles, same thing. You got to have a lightweight compact engine, or Trax four-wheelers. Or
yeah, I was actually in Arizona in a Can-Am
motorcycle
side-by-side thing, and yeah, it had a Rotax on it.
Yep.
And so currently, now in 2022, how many different models do they build and the horsepowers that go?
So what they're building right now, the focus is on the four-stroke engines. And so you start with the 81 horsepower 912, then you go to the 100 horsepower version of that, which is normally aspirated and can be either carbureted or fuel injected. Okay. Then you have 115 horsepower turbocharged engine, and then the latest 141 horsepower 915, which is fuel injected and turbocharged.
Okay, so quite a choice there. And as we were talking earlier, you were talking to me about the new fuel injection system. And which model is that on? That's
all the IS versions, which would right now would be the 912 IS at 100 horsepower and the 915 IS, which is 141.
All right. And what's unique about that fuel injection system?
Well, it's a completely redundant all-electronic system. So you have dual electronic ignition, you have dual electric fuel pumps, and you have a completely redundant dual electronic fuel injection system with two injectors per cylinder and a dual path ECU. So the engine control unit, there's two of them side by side, and they're controlling all the systems. And if one of them were to have a problem, you've got backup everywhere.
So, So that all has to be electrically driven.
It's all electrically driven. It's
by internal gen.
Yes.
Generators.
Two internal generators, so it doesn't rely on the airframe for anything except for startup.
And I think you said even if you lost both of those, you can go back to battery power.
Yeah, there's a third power source, which we call emergency power. And I've not seen it happen, but if it was your day, I guess, and you lost both internal generators, then you could go to emergency power, restart, and run off the battery.
That's extremely unlikely. So, and I know you've got experience with some of these new engines. You were telling me a story about you ferried an RV-12, was it?
RV-12, yeah.
From the factory in Oregon.
Yeah, so I had an opportunity to bring an RV-12 back from Oregon, and there were a lot of people that were happy to do it, and I'm like, no, I want a break. I'm going to get out of the shop and go out there and see the guys at Vans and bring this plane back. It was like a little holiday for me.
Right.
And it's a little bit of adventure, you know, to bring a small plane back from
sure.
Portland to Florida. That's, so
is it an adventure?
So, yeah, I went out and picked up the airplane, it's a RV-12 IS, so the latest version, factory-built airplane, and uses the 912 IS engine. And the efficiency of that engine-airframe combination is really remarkable. Because I was flying VFR and almost always eastbound, I chose 11,500 for my cruising altitude, about as high as I could go without oxygen.
And that's kind of, isn't that about the limit?
It is. You're on the
even
edge.
Even though it's fuel injected.
Yeah.
And
yep. But you know, I'm pretty healthy and I do pretty well at that altitude. But at that altitude, I could still get 120 knots true airspeed, and my fuel burn was 3.8 gallons an hour.
Folks, I want him to say that again, Phil. The fuel burn was
3.8.
It's your camera's
okay,
over 3, here.
3.8 gallons an hour at 120 knots at 11,500. And that was very consistently doing that. And so we were basically getting more than 30 nautical miles per gallon at 120 knots. It works out to like 37 statute miles per gallon, something like that.
That's crazy. I mean, that's crazy.
At 120 knots.
Yeah,
and this plane had the brand new Senchnik 3-blade prop on it.
Okay,
which Senchnik developed for this engine and this market, and just silky smooth like a turbine, just really really smooth with that prop. Yeah, this plane was coming back to our flight school to go into duty at the flight school.
And you were also telling me it has an auto mixture feature.
Yeah, so one of the big advantages of the IS engines, the new fuel-injected engines, is they are pre-mapped for any possible combination of throttle position, RPM, temperature, or pressure. So the computer knows when it looks at those four parameters and it says, this is the mixture that I should be giving the engine. And this is the ignition timing I should be giving the engine.
It changes timing and everything.
It has full control of the engine. So you end up with just incredible efficiency. And when you drop below, usually it's about 97% throttle position. It sees the throttle position in the engine control unit, and it goes into eco mode, which is lean to peak operation. And you see your fuel burn just tumble right on down.
Automatic lean to peak to optimum pressure, throttle.
Yep.
That's very cool.
It is. And it makes them super clean and super lean.
How many gallons did you say you burned? You had to stop four or five times.
Yeah, so I came the long way because it was the safe way. There was still some snow up in the Rockies. And so I didn't want to come straight across the Rockies. Plus, you got to get, you know, it can be dicey at that time of year. Still a lot of snow up there. So I came down from Portland. Actually, the Vans factory is in Aurora, just south of Portland. Mm-hmm. Came down from there via Lake Tahoe and Las Vegas and by Phoenix.
Call the southern.
Yeah, and then straight across, right?
Right.
And then up by Tallahassee and then down to Florida. down into Florida. So that route, I used 81 and a half gallons. I did have some tailwinds, some good tailwinds.
Oh, yeah, west to east, but
still
81 gallons.
Yep.
That's for us guys that fly, you know, 300 horse GA aircraft. That's crazy.
Yeah, the efficiency is remarkable.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow. That I think that's a great story. So for any of you out there looking for something to put on your light sport or you know you're looking for a power plant, yeah, 3.8 gallons an hour, and an RV12 at 120 true.
Yep. Yeah, it'll do.
That's pretty economical flying right there.
You know, it's only got a 20.2 gallon tank, and initially when you look at that, you go, that's not enough.
That's not a lot of.
But at that fuel burn, I did a 4.3 hour leg, and I still had at least 45 minutes of fuel, an hour of fuel left when I landed. So it is enough.
That's great. That's really good. So I want to go on here because you are also, I would call, almost famous for inventing and developing the AirCam airplane. And so most people, I only know what one is because there happens to be one on the field that I fly out of, right? And I watch it go out and I'm like, I don't know what that is, but I would like to take a ride in that thing because it's a two-place twin, either amphib, fixed gear, or straight floats. Or you
most,
make it on?
Yeah, there's a couple on straight floats, but most of them are on amphibs. Yeah, or land gear.
And they're open cockpit.
Mm-hmm. Open, and we do have an option to enclose it for cold weather.
I tell you what, I am, I'm really... explain why you came up with that design. I know there's a story behind that. Explain why and some of the intricacies that make that such a unique airplane.
Right. So I had been doing a fair bit of bush flying for different film companies in the 80s, and I really enjoyed that because I enjoyed photography as a kid. And combining the two, flying and photography and filming, was really cool. So I had worked with the Bartlett crew in the Namib Desert and using single-engine, ultralight-type planes to do the
Namib
filming.
Namib Desert, where is that?
Namib Desert. It's, if you go to South Africa, the next country north of there on the west coast is Namibia.
Okay.
And the Namib Desert is up in the northwestern part of Namibia.
Okay.
It's a place called the Skeleton Coast.
Well, I don't feel bad about not knowing about it.
No, it's not. Not very, a lot of people go there.
Right.
But it's a cool place. And, of course, they have really, it's desert. But there's some really unique wildlife there. And so the Bartletts were documenting that. And I got to fly with them and help them with one of their specials, which was Survivors of the Skeleton Coast, a one-hour National Geographic special.
Cool.
And a cover story in National Geographic magazine. And during that time, I made some other contacts. And what happened was later on, another crew came to me and said, can you help us with this work we're doing in the Congo, which is totally different from the desert, the opposite, rainforest. So that was in northern Congo, up on the equator of Africa. And the difference was that we had lots of places to land in the Namib Desert, and we had no place to land in the Congo.
Don't build too many runways in the rainforest.
So they figured they could get us a 600-foot strip. So we needed to be able to fly in out of a very short strip. Fuel all had to be brought in on the Songa River in dugout canoes, so it had to be something that didn't need much fuel.
In a dugout canoe?
Dugout canoe and 55-gallon drums, yep. We had to bring the fuel in like that, and so we couldn't use much fuel, had to operate out of a 600-foot strip, and had to give the view that they wanted, which was what the AirCam does. And so I'd been working on the design because I wanted two engines, because I always enjoyed flying over stuff that was unlandable. It seems like that's the most fun stuff to fly over. And, of course, you're in a situation where if you lose the engine, often you're in a bad way, right?
Very much so.
I wanted two engines for that, and I wanted something that would really fly on one engine. So we built the first air cam for them, took it apart, crated it, shipped it over to the Congo, and then I flew over and put it all together, put it back together, and we really took it apart. We had both engines off and the wings off and the tail section apart and the fuselage broken in two halves. And so I put it all back together and then ferried it from Brazzaville in southern Congo all the way up to this little town called Weso in the middle of nowhere in northern Congo. And first plane ever to land at the strip that they had built. And, you know, that's...
Because not very many planes could land at the strip that they built.
And when these guys were communicating with me back then, it was usually a telex, you know, a fax.
Right.
Or we would get a satellite call, which was a big deal, and discuss how it was going on the airstrip and on the airplane. They asked me, how do we know when the airstrip is smooth enough for you? And I said, do you have any vehicles there? Well, we have this one Toyota Land Cruiser. It was a Toyota pickup, actually. And I said, drive on the strip. We're looking at a liftoff touchdown speed of about 40 miles per hour. If you can go 40 miles an hour down the runway and you're not being bounced out of the truck, then it's good. And so that's what they did. And every time they hit a really bad dip, they'd say, okay, we need to fill that in a little bit.
That's crazy.
And that worked.
That's crazy. Go down there 40 miles an hour. If you don't bounce out of the truck, we're probably good.
Yeah.
That's great. Yep. And so that started a whole new business for you, didn't it?
Yeah, it really worked well. And after that, I made another trip for them and flew the plane a second time out there. And we immediately built a second prototype, brought it to Sun and Fun in Oshkosh, and we it seemed like there was tremendous interest in it. And so at that point, we decided to develop it as a kit plane. And so really the one that they had, you would call Generation 1. There were two of those built. The first one is in the EAA Museum at Oshkosh, Wisconsin. That's AirCam 1, the one that we flew for them in the Congo. And then the second one was very similar for testing and research and market research. And then the third one was like the current ones. We call it a Gen 2. And that was 22,000 hours later of engineering and development to get. Yeah, because we said, okay, we're going to sell this. We got to do load testing. We got to fully engineer the whole airframe. And then by 99... or 2000, we had the first kits completely going together for customers.
So, and we're just kind of running low on time, and there's one more story I really want to get to. And we're down to, you know, 3 or 4 minutes here. So, you guys now, I mean, a multi-C rating is a very hard thing to get.
Sure. That's a great program that we have going right now. By the way, we did develop Gen 3, which is in production now, three-seater.
Right. And it's a three-seater.
Yeah, so that's what we're currently producing.
Glad we got that.
But most of the air cams are Gen 2.
You have one of those here, by the way?
We do.
And cool.
Yeah, right over outside of Building D and C, there's a Gen 3 there. Yeah, the multi-C program, so a lot of air cams are going on floats. And the FAA requires the air cam owners to have a multi-C rating if they want to fly an air cam on floats. That's a hard rating to get. So we petitioned the FAA to allow us to get a special LOTA that would allow us to train for multi-C. And AOPA and EAA and the Seaplane Pilots Association all worked with us and were very helpful at trying to convince the FAA that it was worthwhile to try that. And we developed a special rigging package for the floats. We're using Claymore 2180 composite floats, fully amphibious. And we developed a maintenance 100-hour maintenance program for the floats and the airframe, and then Rotax's program for the engines, and a training program that met all the ACS requirements. And it took a couple years, but they finally agreed.
So the message I want to make sure that everybody gets, Phil, is if you want a multi-C rating, you can go down to your facility in Sebring, Florida, right?
Yep.
and you can actually get a full-on multi-C rating.
Yep, multi-C rating. They require an unrestricted multi-land rating to start. You have to have that already. You can't have a centerline thrust or a limited multi-engine land rating. But if you have an unrestricted multi-land, you can get multi-C in the air cam.
So, I mean, that's because, and it's, and I want people to understand, it's so hard to get because other than the air cam, isn't there only one more multi-amphibious or seaplane? The Otter, maybe?
Well, the only...
That's still made?
The only plane I know that's being produced in any quantities right now is the Twin Otter. Yeah, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so anyway, I imagine there's a lot of people out there that are interested in that. I mean, I know a lot of guys that collect ratings, right?
Well, there are people that are coming to get the rating, but, you know, they get good training, and
right.
It's a real program. They take a real check ride. They have to pass.
Right.
And they meet all the requirements for the... And one of the things that they get that I think they don't really think about until they get there is gear training. Because
right.
a lot of people get their single C rating on straight floats. And so, yeah.
So we're just right at the end of our program time here. I could sit and talk to you for another hour, Phil. I mean, because you've just got so much information, but... for now, we're going to sign off. Go see that new Gen 3 C-Cam out here at Sun & Fun. We are in Lakeland, Florida at Sun & Fun 2022. I'm Joel Hargis. Stay tuned. We got more great stuff coming up.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. Please visit our studio website to hear past programs.